Hey guys, I just wanted to reach out to you and let you know that Surewinder is still selling amazing products. Some of you guys have been dragging your feet for whatever reason. If your shoulder hurts, do not waste time. Pull the trigger. I just bought four or five of them and we had two guys out. You know how much it cost me to pay for two guys being out with bad shoulders? We just pulled the trigger and we said, listen, everybody's going to have one on a truck. It's mandatory. You got to use it. Don't hesitate. Don't wait till your guys go down. It's going to cost you more. Buy a Surewinder.
What's up, guys? Ryan here at Torch Talk Podcast. And we are on fire with the startups lately. But before we get into talking about a startup, I want to do a couple announcements. Yes, I know. You can fast forward if you want. But before you do, these are important updates that I think you're going to like. February 1st and 2nd and March 21st, 22nd, we have sales training for technicians. If you have technicians that are underperforming or you got to find a way to generate more revenue per opportunity, I'm going to show you guys how to treat customers so well that they want to buy your top package. And I'm talking about delivering an amazing experience that's second to none. And that's how you make that happen. So we are going to go over those things during the sales training. Also, we're about 50% sold out on GDU Summit. If you are interested in going to GDU Summit, make sure you register. We do plan to sell out. We only have a limited amount of space and we would love to have you. So if you want to go and financially you don't think you can pay the price, hit me up. I want to chat with you and discuss, see if there's a solution for you. We do have some people who are interested in helping certain people out with sponsorships and things like that. So let me know. The ticket price includes food, hotel, event, and if you do all in, it also includes a bunch of additional things like dinner and also the entertainment. So super important. We haven't set a January webinar, and I know this is going out in a few weeks, so hopefully by the time you hear this, it will be out. So make sure you check out the GDU Facebook page and the GDU website for registering for the webinar. We do a webinar on a different topic every month, just giving away free content, trying to help you guys out as much as possible. So if you have questions, need anything on that, just hit me up, let me know. But we will try to get that out as quickly as possible. So today we have Jen. How are you, Jen?
I'm great. Hey, everyone.
Great. How is it doing? You've done GDU now for a couple weeks. What's your feedback? What do you think?
Yeah, great group of guys and gals. Love it. Love hearing from them about what's going on in their world and just hearing their success stories and their challenges and working on some planning this week, getting some social media going for the group, GDU, Instagram and Facebook pages. So stay tuned for that. Check us out there and we'd love to interact with you. It's been fun.
Yeah, there you go. So it's a little bit of a transition, kind of getting in the groove because I think all of these people are so tight, right? And one thing that we always hear when people come in is they feel like they're kind of coming in the middle of something because everybody's so close. Yeah. And although that's a bad thing, but it's also a really good thing. But GDU is such a blessing to my life and so many lives and the people in the garage door industry. And it's a safe place where we go and discuss things about our business and challenges and things that we're trying to overcome or we want to do better. And I love hearing all the wins. We've had quite a few wins posted in the chat group. So that's exciting. It's motivating. It's motivating.
Yeah.
So today, our guest, Jen's our co-host, but our guest today is a gentleman who reached out to me recently. And this happens occasionally where people are like, hey, looking for information, just trying to build a network and chat, talk, and I'm on this whole startup thing right now where I really am passionate about helping startup businesses, and that's always been my passion. But this gentleman is smart, hungry, wants to learn, and made a statement to me that there's just a lack of information out there, and not many people in the garage door industry are willing to help other people in the garage door industry. He's met a lot of resistance locally, and so he reached out to me. He's in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I'm in Atlanta, which is probably about, I don't know, an hour apart, roughly. And so we got to chatting. I thought he was a smart guy and has a good thing going. So I just wanted to reach out to him and say, hey, would you think about coming on the podcast and us just discussing things? Because he had some great questions, but also I love the story of how people start their businesses. So Roberto, how are you, sir?
Fantastic, man. I'm very humbled to be here. I think I could get a lot of knowledge from you. And I called every single place from Kentucky down to Florida, one business at a time, trying to get information, try to network. And I called you guys. I was looking for Aaron because I figured Aaron Overhead Doors, he owns it. Let me talk to him. And then whoever I spoke with on the phone, sadly, I can't remember their name.
I think it was Lily.
They were awesome. They were awesome. They said, hey, so Ryan, he owns the company, and this is all the information that's already been pushed out. Start here. I've been eating up the podcast like nobody's business.
Nice.
Started checking into GDU, and it's just after months of doing a lot of homework, a lot of answers have been answered, and a lot of questions have been answered. So yeah. Thank you for that.
That's good. I love your hunger. The idea that you were willing to pick up the phone and call a bunch of garage door guys and try to network and bounce ideas and learn just is, it's really cool to hear. Like you don't see that very much these days, you know? And so, I'm an open book and I don't do everything right. And I, you know, go through highs and lows, but at the same time, I'm always willing to help whenever I can. So, I called you back and we had some good conversation about business and information, and I try to make myself available as much as possible. But I was just intrigued by you, like your hunger and excitement for what you're doing. So tell us a little bit about how you got in the garage door industry.
I believe the first time I had an install, I was 13 years old. My dad was or still is a handyman. He wanted to learn the business and get into the industry, add that to his knowledge, to his toolbox. So he ended up working for free for 2 months installing garage doors. Now, this is something where obviously they took advantage of him. You know, no one should work for free. But he worked for 2 months with a big company in Houston, Texas, and started taking me. There was no such thing as holidays. Sundays was, hey, we're going to go finish up the doors I couldn't do on Friday. And so at 13 years old, I was installing everything from Wayne Dalton 9100s to, and this is Houston, Texas. So everything is absolutely wind loads and heavy duty stuff. I believe my first injury was one of those springs fell on me on my foot, unloading it from the truck. And yeah, caused a lot of injury. Yeah. After that, he introduced me to steel toe boots. But yeah, that's how it all started.
That's awesome. And then where did you go from there?
After that, basically, I was 13. After he learned, he started just doing garage doors mainly. But I went back to school. I was focusing on that. I went to the university in Keene, Texas, and became a firefighter paramedic. And then found out real quick that it doesn't pay the bills. And something happened, and we'll get to that someday. But there were some controversial issues with the police department over there. And, you know, being a college student, I didn't make the wisest decisions. So I decided to get into construction, which is what I knew. And been there, hopped around, did a couple of different jobs. But it wasn't until I met my wife that I realized, you know, time to settle down, time to choose something and focus on one thing and do something that I could pass on to our family, to our kids. And yeah, basically 3 years ago, we chose to start up the company in Florida and basically went on my own. Now, my dad, he's a handyman. He could do absolutely everything in a house, which is very hard to market. What I could see is that, you know, we have 2-3 storage unit size garages full of materials, full of tools. I wanted to focus on one thing and then get the biggest slice that I can on that, and just easier to market, easier to train guys, easier to have guys under you that are doing a good job. So what I liked the most out of all the things I've learned from him was garage doors. And that's how Ty Grigg came to be.
Nice. Very yeah. Cool. Tell me, Ty Grigg is a unique name.
Yeah.
I don't think you have an issue with a trademark or copyright or anything like that. Where did it come from? How did you come up with that name?
So my parents, they owned Infantes Handyman, which is my last name. Infantes Handyman. My uncle, he has another Infantes company. And basically, I wanted something that sounded a little more white, if I got to go down to it. But it's actually very corny and very cheesy. So I'm a believer, and I wanted the first company that I have to be kind of a tribute or a thank you to God. So that's what Ty Grigg stands for. TY is thank you, capital G, thank you God, and then my initials, Roberto Infante Garcia. And that's where Ty Grigg came from.
That's
it's
really
cheesy. It's not cheesy. Bro. But
I think it's great. I'm proud of
that. I think that's unique and it's got a great story to it.
Yes.
So I got a question for you. Have you created your core values, mission, and vision statement yet?
Not necessarily. I think I've been listening to the podcast for about a week, and my wife is tired of hearing your voice and me listening to it. And I've had to scale it down just a bit. But I think I've had him in the back of my head for a while. It's just getting it on paper. And I know that's important. I haven't done that step yet.
Yeah.
I've seen what other companies around me do, and I know kind of what I don't want to do. And that's kind of driving, you know, where's the company going to focus on? Well, what are they doing that I could copy and, you know, hopefully do better if I can? So I have some of those things in mind, but I haven't put them on paper yet.
Yeah. Core values. I like the exercise of doing core values. And I think I mentioned this in a previous podcast, but I like the idea of creating core values that represent ideals that your employees can bounce their questions off of and get answers. Meaning, if someone's in the field and they're stuck and they want to pick up the phone and call you, they don't even have to, because all they have to do is be like, what's our core values? And then apply that question to the core values, and then should be able to come up with the answer of how to deal with that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we live and breathe the core values of our company. And that's where, like, I've done a lot of things wrong, bro. And that's probably one of them, is we've created core values, but we didn't make them a big enough deal, you know? And there's been times where we have hired based on core values and we have fired based on core values, but there's like a lot of decisions were made without our core values in mind as well. And we've changed our core values. So they've evolved over the years. We started out with, I think it was like 4 or 5, maybe it was 5 or 6 core values. And then We went to GDU Summit 22, I think it was. And we had a guy teach about these things, and core values was a big topic. And he taught that he asked everybody in the room, he was like, what's your core values? And even the business owners struggled to remember their core values. Why? Right. Number one, because there's so many of them. Number two, they don't live, breathe, and sleep them. They don't eat them. You know, it's not part of their DNA. And when it's not part of your DNA, how can your team get behind those core values as well? Right. So with that, we realized that, you know, hey, we have too many, and we're not ourselves as leaders eating, breathing, sleeping, you know, all of that, living the core values. So we dropped it down to three, so it'd be easy for everybody to remember. But three is very difficult, because how do you get answers to the things that you want? How do you define your passion and the core values of what you do in three words? Like, it's almost impossible. So I'm thinking about going back to like an 8 or 10 core value. But this time, like, printing it out for everybody, giving everybody 2 or 3 little postcards with it on there. And then they put it in their truck, they put it at their desk, they put it, you know, at their house, you know, whatever. And then, you know, put it in the office, put it in the warehouse, make sure it's everywhere, so everybody knows exactly what the core values are. These are the things that we're going to be basing decisions off of. And when you think of it that way, it becomes a lot easier to create your core values, because it's like, hey, what's our DNA? What do we want to be known as? How do we want to run our company? You know, what do we want to look like? And then if you put it on paper, it almost becomes a thing. And then if you bring it up every day, or if somebody does something, you say, I see you do our core value right there, and mention the core value culture. Mm-hmm. I see how you put in the effort and made our culture better today. Right. I see how you didn't cut any corners on that install. Great job. Right. So reiterating those and always referencing them in praise and in constructive criticism is the only way, right? And it makes like one-on-ones and meetings with your team so much easier, because these are the things, and we made it known. You're not doing 2 or 3 of these, and we need you bought in on all of them, not just a few of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I would challenge you to do that while you're still a smaller company, and then literally make that part of every day. Like, every day when you wake up, core values, think about them. When you drive to work, repeat them. And then, you know, if you have like a little chat app for your team, which every company should have, in my opinion, I love Slack for that, but just being able to communicate and, you know, ask people in the chat group every few days, what's our core values? In your meetings, kick it off with core values, right? Like, just mm-hmm. make it everything. Like, get annoying with it.
Yeah. One of the, I'm going to try not to turn this into a sermon, but keep in mind that my dad was a pastor. So I inherited some of that from him. The Bible a lot of times mentions things that aren't natural for us as human beings. The Bible tells us, hey, love not only your neighbor, but love your enemy. You know, what are the God's love letter, God's Bible, or his word for us, reminds us daily, if we read it, to do something that is not natural to us, to do something for our neighbor, and not just for him, but for our enemy, and, you know, much more. I think that my core values are going to be things that, like you mentioned, things that aren't easy for me to do. Like, I install a whole door, or it's a spring replacement, and I know it's just the IPPT, it's just a little slightly off, and I know I should replace that, but I'm tired. It's been my 5th or 6th call of the day. I want to go home. We're about to have a baby. I'm going to need to be here. But my core value should be something that reminds me, even though it's natural for me to want to call it quits and go home. And hey, probably the customer will never know because they never unhook it from the motor. They'll never know.
Yeah.
The core value should remind me to, hey, go back, do it right. And 2 Corinthians 10:31, everything you do, whether it is you sleep, you eat, drink, whatever it is, do it for the glory of God. And it should be something that as a business owner, it should be applied to me first. And then, yeah, do that from the get-go. I believe so.
Yeah, I agree. Good word. Yes, you got some preach in you. I like that. Integrity, I think, is a good core value for every company because it's what you do when nobody's looking, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard, man. I've been in the garage and been faced with that decision, tired, exhausted, got to get home. It's late, you know, and the decision is, you know, try to get home, make the wife happy and, you know, be on time for dinner or stay and swap out the springs and figure it out. Right. Mm-hmm. And as simple as that may sound saying it, when you're exhausted and it's 100 degrees outside and you've been there all day and you've been getting your butt kicked on this job, it's really easy to be like, we're close enough. Yeah. Right. And just walk away. So I love that. And if our employees could have that in them, right, that would be key because I think, and how that starts is that attitude of, you know, this is it, right? Like this is our core values. This is who we are. This is who we represent. And, so I like that a lot. So you started your company in Florida and then moved to Chattanooga. Why'd you move to Chattanooga?
In the spirit of not going, and getting all emotional in this, my wife was pregnant and, towards the end of the pregnancy, we lost a baby. And it was one of those, like the whole family, every time we have a family gathering in Florida, it's 60 people, Cubans reproduce probably way too much. But it's like 60 family members all gathered. Well, imagine 60 family members reminding you almost daily, like, hey, I am so sorry for your loss. I mean, that's great, but we had to get out of there. Yeah. And we came up here because there's a ministry headquarters here in I'm in McDonald, just east of Chattanooga. And we came and did a year of volunteering. So for a year, we shut down the company. We still had installs to finish out the contracts in Florida. But basically, after that was done, we moved up here and just started in September. So it's like we're fresh a couple months in now, about yeah. 3 months in. But that's what brought us up here. It yeah. was, yeah. And I like the mountains. And Cubans are too loud. I think that's
what it is. Understood. So what do you like to do most? You like to do the sales, the service, or the install?
Most. I'm a mechanical guy. I've done diesel mechanic for a while. I think any interaction with the customer, and especially if they remember what it sounded like before I got there, and then seeing their reaction afterwards, it's like, hey, I wasn't just doing a sales pitch. Like, hey, there's actually a difference. And thank you for noticing that. That's a part that I like, that interaction right before I leave. Customer's happy. I worked. I provided for the family, but I was able to deliver. I think that's my favorite part of it.
Yeah. That's awesome. So how was it taking a company? Did you just dissolve the company in Florida and then moved?
So we were the subcontractors for, I don't know if I should mention it, but a very big company in Jacksonville. And they were getting backed up. So I came in basically doing the door-to-door knock and let's see what happened. And that turned into a basically kept five of us guys installing daily about 3 to 4 doors a day. From that one contract. So it kept us very busy and provided. And So I actually had, they always paid their tickets up front, which is, I think, unheard of. They paid for all the doors up front. So they would order about 50 doors in. And as the houses came up, like, hey, go do this door or this house, they had, I think, $15,000 worth of credit. And then December of 2022, I called them. And or they called me and said, hey, things are slowing down, so hold off for a while. And we've been living up here for a couple months already. And then we held off for 2 months, nothing, absolutely nothing. 3 months, I had guys with no work, you know, just little side jobs here and there, waiting to get for some more work from them. And it just never happened. It had me a lot of sleepless nights because $15,000 and, you know, 4 or 5 months later. And, you know, we spend the money. We've been volunteering here for a while, getting no pay. So that money just dissolved.
Right.
And I talked to the guy after praying a lot, after, hey, what can I do? I'll go back to Florida for a couple months and install the doors. What can we do? And he said, hey, you know what? Thank you. Don't worry about it. God bless. Go and, you know, go do your thing in Chattanooga. And so after that contract finished and he was happy, we completely shut it down with, like, we don't have no ads running, nothing. But if I get something by word of mouth, either my dad or my father-in-law, they'll go do the job, the service.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So you're bought in. You're 100% in. You're never going back to working for somebody else.
Never. No.
You love it.
Yeah, I do. Sadly, my parents, they did the best they could. And not sadly, gratefully, I'm yeah. thankful that my parents did the best they could. They provided as much as they could. I think that their mentality, my dad's mentality coming out of Cuba was, you know, America is the best government there is on earth. And he gets that and believes that. Now, the American life that we currently, most people have, the go to work 9 to 5, go home and do this, I just never bought into it. It's something just did not click. And I could never put it into words until I started reading the book. And this is why I love books. Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I don't know if you've read that book. Yes. It just opens up your mind and you're like, this is exactly why, you know, I was, even though I had awesome bosses, I had awesome jobs. One of my jobs was like, hey, here's a credit card. Since I speak fluent Spanish and I look white, I could do the oil field business. So I could keep the rednecks happy and I could keep the guys in Mexican old rigs happy. So they would send me out and like, hey, take care of the customers down in Mexico. Here's a credit card. It sounds like an awesome job. I was single, going to Mexico with a credit card to keep people happy.
Yeah.
I just couldn't be happy in that job. So I knew that even if I didn't make as much money or if it was going to be risky, I knew I had to go out for myself. And that's what happened in 2020, 2021.
So what, how many people you have now there?
Here in Chattanooga, it's just my wife and I. In Florida, I have my father-in-law, I hooked him up with another garage door company to keep him busy in the meantime. But he's about to move up this month, and my dad is looking for houses nearby. So we're about to have them two come up, and then they train about two people, one person each to install with them. That way we could grow organically from that. But as of right now, it's just my wife and I here.
So they're packing up and moving.
Mm-hmm. February is going to be their end of February is going to be their last day with where they're living now, their housing, and they're going to be up here. And we have a baby coming in Next month, beginning of next Weird month. Girl. Boy, so free labor.
Yeah. Call him Tigrig.
Oh, I was thinking about it, but my wife, she frowned upon it. So Benjamin. Benjamin.
Yeah. I like that. That's a good name. Yeah.
So,
so you hit me up and had asked if you could ask me some questions.
Yeah.
So you had some questions prepared. So fire away. Let's. I don't get to answer too many questions on the podcast, but
let's do it.
I'll give it my best shot.
All righty. So a lot of the companies I've called, I've had to specially reach out to people outside of my area because, you know, they don't want to talk to competition. I get it. And that's not everyone, but most of the people I reached out to. So outside of my area, I contacted a gentleman, let's call him Bob. And Bob said, like, hey, this is how I run my company. And from the companies I've seen, you can never do both service and new building installs successfully. Companies that try to tackle both of them at the same time tend not to do well. My question is, and he couldn't really go into it, but or explain it sufficient for me. Why is that? And do you share that belief? Can you do the residential services and new construction and be successful at it? Or what would be some of the red flags to watch out for?
Yeah, I think, it's definitely possible. I think it's depends if you're using the same guys. Historically here in Atlanta, like not all, I don't want to talk in generals, but there's a lot of guys who do new construction installs that like hate or struggle with retrofit, and you put them in a retrofit situation and they literally fall apart. I've seen it happen. So the idea of diagnosing for those guys is very difficult. They like to go into a clean garage with a perfect opening, install the door and go home. So they're probably not the best fit for that solution. Right. On the flip side of that, you have, if you have staff that are separate, some people installing doors and some people doing service, then it becomes an operational thing because the flows are very different, right? So I don't think that it's impossible. I don't know too many that do it well, so it is a good point, right? I think Bob, whatever his name is, brought up a really valid concern or topic, because I do know quite a few companies that do residential new construction as their primary core business, but don't do service very well.
And so the reason I'm looking into doing both, because I'm one of those people that I want to do both of them, and is that for me, growing up in the Hispanic community, I know there's a lot of Hispanics personally that I know, either family members or friends, that are hardworking, very dedicated, and would not only go the extra mile, but do that trip several times just to, you know, please their employer. And sadly, because of the language barrier, they can't get good paying jobs, and the jobs they do get absolutely kill them. And one of the things that I notice is that it's very, very difficult to send someone that doesn't speak a word of English or very broken English to do a service call. It doesn't give the company a good image, and you have to be careful with that. However, in new construction, you could have your Rentera music in the back, and, you know, although you want to be professional also, but they don't have that barrier. If anything happens, if the super needs something, they normally call me, and, you know, we could squash it real quick, get whatever issues taken care of. But my thing was that I love service. I love going in and talking to the customer. Some of the guys that I want to bring on and hire on, they can't do that. So to keep work to them and to be able to provide that to them, I need to look into new construction. And also, during December, January, it slows down a lot, at least from what I've seen in the service side. Nobody wants to spend money on garage doors. Everyone's thinking presents, holidays, being with the family. Normally, what I've seen is that new constructions, even though it slows down also, but you can still keep your guys busy and, allowing them to keep food on the table, especially during those months. So that's why I don't want to put all my eggs in one basket, but then also I don't want to spread myself too thin and get into two completely different worlds where I fail in both. Chinese proverb says, "He who chases two rabbits catches none." So, I want to stay focused, but diversify.
Yeah, I understand that. That's good, bro. Listen, I probably didn't crush that answer, but it's okay.
No,
Not sure
I
I'm
think.
going to ask that one, but
Yeah. So, are you guys doing any new buildings?
we do some, but it's mostly super high end,
Okay.
like $1 million up homes.
Yeah. And that's something that I've seen here. It's much nicer sitting down with that builder that does the high-end homes, the custom homes. Like, one of the best purchases I've ever made was this thing right here, a tablet. There's the program in here. I could go take a picture of the whole house and showcase what each door would look like with their colors, with all that. I think that brought up the game a lot. And with the new builders, with those custom builders, I think that's been paying off the most because they don't go just for the AMR 1000. Then they're like, "Hey, let's check out. Yeah, I know you have these, but let's go look at the other side of the spectrum." And it's been pretty awesome. But
Good. So, what's your next question?
all right, five things that someone like myself should have down before growing the company, before I hire anybody else, since it's basically still me working at the company. What are the top five things that I should make sure to have before bringing anyone on? One would be, I guess, like the core values that we spoke about.
I think so. Yeah, that would probably be the first thing, I think. Yeah, 100%.
What's something else that, coming from someone that's a service person to being a business owner, what are some things that I should focus on? Like for me, it was accounting. I've never done accounting. I was a paycheck to paycheck kind of person. I have this money in my bank. I could go spend it.
Yeah.
Thanks to books and to my wife and listening to her wisdom, we're changing that a bit. But is there any pointers that you would give to someone before they take that step in the next couple months? What are things that they should establish in their company before bringing anyone else on?
Yeah, that's good. So they have a company, they're a one-man person, and they want to bring on their first employee, right? So the first thing we established was core values. I think you establish, and we'll just wrap everything into that. Do core values, mission statement, vision statement. It's so much easier to recruit new people if they understand the vision and mission of the company and your core values. Like that is so much easier for you to recruit and hire and get people excited about coming to work for you. So that's number one. Number two, I would say, this is like the most boring and against everything that I would probably say normally, but I would do a handbook. Oop, forget the balloons. So Zoom has this new feature that like hand gestures give like emojis. So you can do a heart
Okay.
and it'll do a
Oh,
little,
look at that.
or you can
I'm going
do
to screenshot this. Come on, Ryan.
little fireworks.
Awesome.
So anyway, hey guys, I found something that changed my business and I want to share it with you. We've created packages that have included some of the best products in our industry to offer our service customers. The heart of that package is Stealth Hardware Kit. Stealth Hardware is the quietest hinges on the market. I challenge you to buy at least one of these, test it for yourself. Put it on your truck and design a quiet performance package for your customers willing to pay for a better, smoother running door. Buy your Stealth Hardware Kit at ServiceSpring. Do a search for quiet hinge and then buy that. You can buy a double or single door, 7 or 8 foot tall, and promise you, it'll change your service forever.
Somer USA and Somer Group want to thank you for an incredible year and the trust you put in them and their products. As you know, Somer places high value on relationships, education, customer service, innovation, and professionalism. And they are grateful to you for your part in the fostering and dissemination of these values. If there is any way Somer can support you in your journey, whether through their products, the values they hold to, or the knowledge Somer has gained through interaction with door dealers across the world, please reach out to the team at your convenience. They are here to serve you. Again, thank you from the entire Somer team. Check them out at SomerUSA.com. Tell them Ryan sent you.
So I would say a handbook, and I would try to keep the handbook at, 10 pages or so, but walk through the day of a life of someone who works in the office, day in the life of somebody who works in the field, all the things that could go wrong. I'm not a big fan of non-competes and the fact that like keeping people out of the business. And maybe you want to do that if people are going to start their own company, because one thing that I have been burned on is people leave me to go start a company, and we saw a decline like the last 6 to 8 months before they left of their performance and close ratio and everything else. And then we find out later they were shoveling people over to their own business. So it's one of those things where like, if you're going to do a non-compete, I would do a non-compete on don't recruit our people, don't steal our customers. And if you're going to start your own business, that's fine, but you can't do it in our service area, because that would prevent that from happening. Like, I don't mind if somebody goes to work for somebody else or they want to start their own company, but I've just been burned so many times from people stealing our customers. So that's been like a kind of a big deal for us. So with that, you have, what is that? Two core value mission statement, vision statement,
Handbook and non-compete three.
So
well, one or two more
non-compete in with your handbook. That would be probably one. Okay. So we got two plus that buys me three more. I would say you need to be really good at sales and have at least a basic understanding of marketing, because bringing on another person means that you have to supply enough work for that person. And if you can't do that, then either they're going to quit or things aren't going to go well, right? So I would say sales and a basic understanding of marketing. And then fourth, I would say a basic understanding of accounting principles, how to read reports and how to take action from those reports really is what you need. I don't think you should be doing all the accounting yourself at this stage, because it's time consuming and you can hire somebody to do it for you, like a subcontractor or part-time or whatever. Like, they don't have to even be a full-time person. But that would be the other thing. And then lastly, I would say the number one thing that you probably have to have is a software service that you can use to track everything and automate some systems and processes for you.
Okay.
Would you agree? Is there anything you would add?
I would say too, just to have some type of a plan for training.
Mm. Yeah, even if they're skilled, training them I think is important. Like I can tell you, I haven't done this in a while, and I probably need to, but I used to pull new hires into the conference room and do like a brainwashing session, I guess it's kind of like what it's called, but it's basically me telling my story about how I got to where I am today and sharing it all, right? Like going way back. And then talking about how I started a garage door company and how we got to where we're at. So all of those things I think are important, because it helps people buy into what you're trying to accomplish. And if people understand where you came from, it's easier for them to appreciate where you're at. It's easy for people to come into my business and be like, oh, wow, he's got a big building and you know, all these trucks and he's probably crushing it. But quite honestly, like, we're not crushing it. You know, we want to be crushing it. And yes, we got a lot of revenue, but if you compare that to my marketing agency, then no, we're not crushing it, right? So we got a lot of work to do. And it's way more difficult running two businesses. You made a statement earlier, like, it's hard to be great at one thing, but it's even harder to be good at two things. And I do like three or four, and I can relate to that, right? And sometimes it feels like everything's going great and I'm on top of the world. And then, like, when times are bad, it feels like I'm getting crushed, right? And so you have these high highs and these low lows that I talk about a lot. And I think trying your best to have balance in your emotions, especially as a startup, you're going to go through tough times. There's going to be cash flow times where it's tight. You're going to have times where things are really good. But just doing things the right way and those five things and what Jen said, I think is valuable as well.
I think the whole mentality behind the rich dad, poor dad, which I'm still going through the book, but it's basically he's saying that there's a carrot. A lot of people are like the donkeys with the carrot in front of them. You know, they're just chasing something without knowing exactly what they're doing or knowing where they want to go. I think it's one of the things I'm saying now is that I want to wake up everyone around me and like, hey, you know, you fell into the trap. You're in the system. You wake up, get out of it. But not everyone is meant to, I think, have their own company. Not everyone is meant to go out and take risks like they do. But you want to, I think I heard you in a podcast that unless you train people enough to be able to leave your company and start their own, you're probably not doing the right job training.
Right.
It's just hard because I know the main reason why my dad's company never grew was he was always scared. The people he trained would go and leave them and start their own company. So that kept him from ever training, from ever growing. But now he's got, you know, double knee replacement. He's 60 years old and still working almost every day to be able to, you know, survive, basically. And yeah, it's a tough one, but you got to take those risks. Now, the one thing that I have seen since we started the company was that you get to see God work in ways that you could have never imagined beforehand. You know, from like we spoke on the phone, I still don't have a great marketing plan. I'm still growing in a lot of things. So a lot of times it's like I'm a day from making my truck payment and there's, you know, we're still tight. The customers haven't shown up. And, you know, you just kind of like put it in God's hands. You don't complain. You're not whining. You're not doing any of that. And God comes through and you're able to see things that, you know, if I'm in a secure 9-to-5 job, I would never experience. But now I'm able to tell my son, hey, for a whole year, we went without doing a single job. And so God provided for all these bills. And I have all the tickets to show it. God provided for all this working as volunteers. So, I don't know. I guess that's how I feel about that.
Yeah. Good, bro. You got any other questions? Or is that it?
I do. Man, I don't know why you got me on this podcast, so I won't let you go now. All right. So, Angie's List, Yelp, Home Advisor. For a startup company, how much should we lean on that? How much time and money should we spend on lead generating companies like those?
Yeah. So in the beginning, I leaned heavily on those because it's naturally a good decision because you can exchange. It's a transaction, right? You exchange money for an opportunity. And if you have a really good sales process and follow-up process, then you should do well with that, right? So I think the key to that is you got to build your reviews, right? It's really hard to compete if you have zero reviews and you're just getting on Yelp and everybody else has a bunch of reviews. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I loved Home Advisor back in the day. until, you know, you had a bunch of guys start their businesses, and then it was a game for them. Like they almost would do the jobs for free to get the customer. And so they just kind of drove it in the ground. But what you have is you have a competitive situation, and as long as you have a strong sales process and the ability to close these jobs, it should work well. Even it has its purpose, even if you want to pick and choose what you get from it, right? So like maybe you just do new doors, or maybe you just do service, whatever you think your strength is and whatever you think you can compete on. But you gotta remember, like you're going into the aquarium full of sharks, right? And it's you versus five other companies that are sending the lead to. So it's just it's a process, and you don't want to live there forever. But there's times where I turn it on, and there's times where I turn it off, and I use it as needed. So you just got to figure out how you want to handle that. But I think it's got its place. I think it's great for startups, and especially if you can get to people on the phone quicker than everybody else. Like as soon as that lead comes in, you call them.
I have some beef with a home advisor. When we left Florida, I put it on pause. But apparently the pause only maximum lasts for, I think, 30 or maybe 90 days. 30. So it was generating leads, even though I thought it wasn't. So I have a huge $2,000 bill from leads I never even acted on. But since it automatically came on. So I'm still trying to work that out with them, and I'll probably hop on and get to that now. But we did have that issue.
I think negotiating some sort of deal on that would be fair. It's not like they didn't get any money from those leads. They sent them to three or four other people. So, I mean,
somebody closed. Money,
you know, and it was an honest mistake. And I think situations like that, most companies are willing to work with people. And so if you offer them, you know, 50 cents on the dollar or something like that, pay it in full and just knock it out, that might be a good solution for that.
I've been listening, and we've talked about such and such media, but I know, like myself, and there's some other people that don't have the budget to be able to do a full blown marketing for people like that, and I'm including myself in that. What are some of the things that we can do as business owners that are starting up? Where, you know, if it means learning how to do video edits and posting our own Facebook and I don't know, maybe not TikTok, but Facebook posts and Instagram posts. What are some things that we could do that we don't have to pay for marketing company, but you would see some results?
Yeah, I mean, you got social medias, right? Like an obvious one. But what do you put on social media? And I think that is the key to the whole thing. I think what we have to do, especially in a startup phase, even as we get bigger, you have a more advantage, is stop looking at yourself as a garage door technician and start looking at yourself as a content creator. And then every opportunity you have, create content and then put it out there. And you want to post it on Nextdoor. You want to post it on Facebook, like be a mass distributor of content and post like four or five times a day on all the different platforms, and understand the platforms enough to know what solutions go where. Right.
Okay.
We did, when we first started, we did a thumbs up campaign and people loved it. Right. Like we would go do a repair, and then after we were done, we do a selfie in front of the garage with us and the customer, and everybody's doing thumbs up. And then we'd post all those pictures on our website. So I had all these pictures of like happy customers, thumbs up. And imagine like if you run an AdWord campaign or whatever, and you drop them on a landing page, and that page has reviews and all the information and a bunch of pictures of happy customers giving thumbs up in front of the garage with the owner of the company. Like how powerful is that, right? So I'm a big fan of doing things like that, creating video content. It doesn't have to be perfect. I know my cousin, you're going to hear this podcast come out on Tuesday, John, he started his company, and he's what, five months old, Jen? Is that what he said?
Yeah, five, maybe six.
He's like 5 or 6 months old, but he's been doing reels on Instagram and crushing it. Absolutely crushing it. Totally free. Now he is spending some money to boost some of the videos and stuff like that, but it's minimal. Like, he's not even spending a lot doing it, right? So little things like that, I think, go a long way.
One of my friends here, he does kitchen optimization basically for the doors and all that. And just for Christmas, which is their slow period, they boosted it from $300 a week to $1,000 a week. And he's like, I can't even take on all the work that I've gotten. Just one customer, $15,000, basically paid it off for months in advance. And it's just, I know it works. It's just, I'm going to hop on that now. And Ari bought me a tripod. We're going to start recording and doing stuff. But I wish I would have known earlier, you know.
I think that's the biggest challenge, is people are afraid, like, to get started. And that's the most challenging part, is we don't do it. Like, are you familiar with Gary Vee? No.
Can say I am.
Gary Vee's like an influencer, right? He's a hardcore entrepreneur, and his name's Gary Vaynerchuk, but everybody calls him Gary Vee. Serial entrepreneur, chairman of VaynerX, CEO of VaynerMedia, CEO of VFriends, and 5X New York Times bestselling author. And like, he just came on the scene like, I don't know, 8 years ago. He was working in his dad's like liquor store, selling wine. And he started a YouTube channel and started doing like wine reviews. And he said that like, it took him like 520 videos on YouTube before things started kicking off. And then everybody started watching, liking, and commenting. But he was consistent with it, you know, same time every week doing the videos. So, you know what I did? I was like, man, what a great story. But I wonder what is like his, I wonder what his video looked like at the very beginning. Gary Vee, first wine video. And so it's right here, 2006. I'm going to play it. You guys tell me if you can hear it, but I just want to do this real quick. Cause I think this is cool. Let's see. Let's share my screen. If you're on YouTube, you can watch this. If not, you can hear it. Can you hear it?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of Wine Library TV. I am Gary Vaynerchuk, Director of Operations here at Wine Library at winelibrary.com, and I am very proud to launch what we think is the first video wine blog. We've been talking about doing a blog here at Wine Library for a long time.
You hear that? We've been thinking about doing a video blog for a long time. Like, I'm very curious how long, but I'm going to play this a little bit longer.
We just realized that we had too much text out there between the website and pounding you with 4 or 5 emails a day. I know we are. It just became something that we thought a blog would just be another layer that you maybe didn't need. Well, as you know, technology doesn't stop, and now we have video blogs, and we feel like we've got something very special here. We think we've got one of the first video blogs in the world.
Look how trashy the lighting is.
Right? Yeah, he's so young.
He's so young. It's the lighting's horrible. The quality of the videos, like, probably not even HD.
For wine, at least. And we're excited. We're going to take an in-depth look at the wine library, the wine industry, wine in general, and lots of cool things. We're going to keep it very, very laid back. We're going to keep it very silly, fun. We have tons of guests lined up to do interviews. We're going to do tours around the store, let you meet some of the wine library staff, and we're going to tour with the camera. You know, maybe on my trip to South Africa or something, we'll get some zebras in here too.
So, I mean, this is Gary Vaynerchuk, right? Wine Library has 38,000 subscribers. This video itself has 339,000 views and it's 17 years old. But if you go to Gary V now, the video production and quality is significantly higher.
Meanwhile, 6,000
are going to, like, here's underrated social media platforms for 2024, 21,000 views in the last 2 weeks just on that one video. You know, 1 month ago, 126,000 views. 2 weeks ago, 75,000 views. 275,000 views 3 months ago. But you got to start somewhere. But I would imagine not many people are going to look at his first video and see how crappy it is, like what I did. Nobody remembers that, right? Nobody's thinking about it.
But look at the mentality he had from day one is, hey, this has been going on for a while, and I'm going to start it. Number two is, it's going to grow to the point that we're going to go to Africa and have zebras in the background. So from the very get-go, it's not only just starting, it's starting with that vision that we were talking about at the beginning. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's important, right? And that's, video is going to be a major part of what we do at Aaron Overhead Doors this year. Like, we're filming every week. And then I challenged my team to be content. Like, I want my team to be content creators. We have such a good opportunity to get video and audio files from our customers. And I'm willing to pay them to get me photos and videos and audio files and whatever I need so that we can put it on social media. So that's the main thing right now is, like, we just want to build so much content that we try to make it interesting enough to where people don't want to leave, but try to post enough to where people see it, because the algorithms hide so much. And if you make a post, like, 20% of your audience is going to see it, maybe. Right. And then if you have a really good one, maybe you boost it. And that's, I think that's just the direction that we're going in. Obviously to each their own. Right. But, I just believe YouTube's a great platform. I believe that Instagram and Facebook are a great platform, and Instagram's great for people outside of your current audience, because you can use hashtags and things like that. And then you have all these suggested, where, like, Facebook, it's more integrated to focus more toward, like, your audience, the people who already like you. So the messages can be slightly different.
So, I mean, I'm sure you know this, but how many touch points do you need now before a customer chooses you? Because it used to be like 3. Now with social media, like, and all these other
9 to 15, if I'm not mistaken, Google just did something on this not too long ago.
Yeah.
How many?
Imagine that.
Touch points before purchase. Google research revealed that on average, consumers spend 7 hours researching a product, engage 11 touch points, and do so in 4 different locations before making a purchase decision.
Okay. See, one of my silly advertisement or marketing ideas was, I was going to take a job here with a local Domino's or Papa John's and print out flyers with every pizza I deliver at night. Hey, here's a little touch point. Right there.
Especially if you're if you are like an Uber driver or you're doing pizza delivery and you do that at night, you do garage doors during the day. I mean, like, if you go up to a house, you see a door that's dented, be like, hey, I just started my door company. I'm doing pizzas at night to help support my family till my garage door company takes off. You know, who doesn't love that story? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The story of the hardworking entrepreneur that's hustling and grinding. Like, there's no shortage of ideas that you can do. And I love that. This is why I brought you on the podcast, right? Is stuff like that, just to stretch people and
don't steal my ideas though, man.
Yeah.
I better not see you up, you know, driving Papa John's.
I might,
bro. Over there in Atlanta.
I might.
Hey, I'll order some. All right. We'll make it happen.
All right. You got any other questions, or are we wrapping?
Well, last one. Number one book recommendation for business owners. What would it be and why?
What stage? because I think it's different.
Yeah, that's true. I'd say keeping quality control. When you're trying to make that culture, and I believe a culture is very closely tied to what's your employees going to be, how they're going to be treating, you know, the customers. So that quality control. So that point where you're trying to grow, you're already growing, and you're trying to keep that, it's blurring it out.
Blur off real quick. Hang on. Let's see. Take the blur off.
Okay.
I love this.
Oh, Zappos. Okay. Which I've been meaning to look into that.
Yep.
And the power of wow.
And we're going to Zappos at GDU Summit. I basically rented the place out for a day. And we're going to do a tour. We're going to learn all about their culture, how they do business. They do crazy stuff. Like after people are done with training, they offer them like $3,000 to leave. If people quit and take the money, they feel like they saved money because they didn't have an employee that was unhappy or felt stuck. So they also told me that when I did the tour, this was a long, 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 long time ago, that they most of their competitors in this space have a metrics of 4.5 minutes, get a customer on the phone, off the phone with a purchase in under 4 to 5 minutes, 4.5 minutes, I think was the target. And they said that what they found was if they were on the phone with customers for more than 8 minutes, they had a better return rate for customers returning to make a second purchase. So imagine if you just adopted a metrics of 4.5%. What does that mean to you? And what does it mean when you don't challenge metrics, right? And you're trying to run on efficiency solely. I think that the main thing that we learn from that story is the guy who's trying to, or the company that's trying to run their business most efficient and spend the 4.5 minutes on and off the phone will always be looking for new customers, right? And this Zappos, who stays on the phone for an average of 8 minutes, has the best repeat and return customers of just about any business. It's because they invest in their time and effort and staff appropriately to spend time and engage with customers. In this book, they talk all about the stories of things that they do with that, giving away, you know, free shoes or, you know, even the first chapter just comes out swinging and I'm like almost crying about it because, you know, I tell people that I don't do this necessarily for the money. Like the money I think is a nice reward, but I love the idea of making a difference in someone's life, like impacting it in a positive way. One that's not just an interaction where I did a garage door for them, but one that like leaves them feeling touched and changed and viewing life in a different perspective. And this book is full of stories about how Zappos did that. And I love it because it expands your mind on all the different ways you can do that. So I won't go into some of the stories because I already told some of them on the previous podcast, but definitely listen to the next few weeks or the previous couple of weeks and read the book, The Power of Wow, and have your team read it, because delivering a wow experience means you have to go so far above and beyond or do something so moving that the customer's like, wow, I can't believe this. This is crazy. Like, you guys just delivered the best experience I've ever had.
Okay. I'll stay tuned. Now, if my wife kicks me out of the house or.
Yeah. I mean, like, remove limitations from anything that you could possibly think of, right? Like, anywhere from charging for the product to. Maybe you can't solve their problem, but you figure out a way to make it happen through one of your competitors or whatever. Like, you become a problem solver, not so much like a transactional company. You become a problem solver. And I think that's so important.
Well, I, from what I've been listening, I think you're focusing a lot on leadership, and I think that's amazing. I'm a avid reader from everything Jocko Willing to how Extreme Tim Ferriss does his stuff. Oh yeah.
I read Extreme Ownership and Dichotomy of Leadership. What is it? Dichotomy of Leadership, I think it is.
Dichotomy, yep. And then I think there's another one. After you listen to enough podcasts of Jocko, anything you read from him, it's in that voice.
Yeah.
So, it's there.
Check out, once you have first couple people, I would say once you get two people, I would read Developing the Leader Within You 2.0.
Okay.
That's a John Maxwell book. He's a legend. And interestingly enough, right, John Maxwell is like 80 something years old, I believe now. And he has a mentor. Like the guy who literally wrote the book and invented the idea that leadership can be developed. And because prior to him, people thought leadership, you were born with it, right? But that's not the case. Like, you're not born with leadership. You don't come out of the womb and be like, I'm going to run a company. No, like, you develop into that, right? Or I'm going to be a pastor or whatever. Like, you may have a call on your life, but you're not born a leader. Like, I think everybody's born a leader to a degree, but you're not born the leader that is expected of you down the road. You have to develop those skills. You have to train, you have to work, you have to, it's like working out your muscles and your brain. You have to develop it. And that's done through reading books, surrounding yourself with people who challenge you, and applying the things that you learn to your life, both personal and business. And I was shocked when he talked so much about his mentor when I was with him, that he's 80 something years old and he's still investing into himself to become a better leader. And he wrote the book on leadership, but he's got a mentor.
Like the humility it takes to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So
it's all of these books. What I'm finding out is that everything from Jocko Willink, all of these books, they all take a chip or a little portion of the Bible and expand on it, or, you know, try to bring it up today. But from the first thing, the first story that we see in the Bible, after Adam and Eve sinned, it was like, hey, my wife, the lady you gave me, she made me sin. And she said, the snake you made me eat the apple. From the first day, everyone was trying to not take ownership.
Yep.
What does Jocko do? He reads, you know, chapter 3 of Genesis and writes a whole book about it. Yep. And but I think all of those principles are in the Bible. I think most of those principles, God has called us to be the heads and not the tails. He has called us and empowered us through his word to be those leaders and those lights in a dark world. But stubborn people like myself, I'll learn by mistakes, but yeah, nonetheless, we're learning.
One thing I'll tell you, like, we talk about being leaders at home and at work. This last year, 2023 was a rude awakening for me. I realized that I was missing it in a lot of different ways, including leadership. And in the last probably 90 days, I've been working really hard to like fix a lot of those things, and damage has been done, right? Like, it's definitely played a role in what we're going through, but I caught it, I think, early enough to where now we're coming out of it, or we will be coming out of it soon. So, but when you take your eye off the ball, there's always almost a consequence to that. Right. And, one thing that I realize is that I can invest a bunch in work and take a lot of pride into it, but like, what am I doing to lead my family? What am I doing to invest in my kids' lives? And I do walks in the mornings. And one morning I get a lot of inspiration going on my walks, and I was just praying. And it came to me, and like maybe it was God just giving me the idea, but I needed to set an alarm on my phone, and every night, like, we pray as a family. And then it was, you know, hey, we're struggling in some areas where we've made some bad decisions, my daughter, my son, myself, whatever. So on a walk, he's like, read Proverbs. And so we read Proverbs one chapter a night and then pray. And it's amazing the impact that has as a leader in your household, taking this stand and being like, hey, we're going to start doing this. And by the way, we're going to set goals for each other as well. And really like taking control. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and he said, you know, I took a back seat a little bit because my wife, she usually handles the children. And so I just took a back seat naturally because she was handling it. And I think that's so easy to fall into that trap, right? Of I'm not needed there. She's got it, or he's got it. And so I'm trying to be present and proactive leader, because there's a big difference. You know, there's leaders that are reactive, that love to solve problems and feel needed, which is very, very selfish and very driven, like self-driven. But a lot of times that comes from a good place in people's heart. They just don't realize how unhealthy it is. And then there's the proactive leader who's three or four steps ahead and constantly implementing the plan and holding people accountable. That's the good leader. That's the leader that we all want to be, right? But we don't even sometimes realize that we're not doing that. We think by being the reactive leader, solving problems that come up as they come up is a good leadership. And I disagree with that. I think if you equip your people, they should be able to fix the problems. You should be out front of all of them, trying to figure out what problems could come up and working on solutions before they even arise. And that's what I'm trying to do with my family. That's what I'm trying to do with my companies. And I you know, if I share that and it impacts one person, to me, I think it's worth it.
James, this is the last scripture I'll read today. James 1:2 says, consider it pure joy whenever you face trials or temptations of many kinds, because out of this, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. And if you let perseverance finish its work, you will become a mature and complete, not lacking anything. If any of you lack wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given unto you. So, yeah, I see that. I've already made a lot of mistakes, everything from leadership to, you know, in the business to in the home. But, you know, especially that last verse, God will give us wisdom if we ask for it. And he's not going to find a reason not to give it to you. He's not going to look at me and say, hey, Roberto, well, yesterday, instead of reading the Bible or praying, you were, I don't know, watching TikTok, or you were on Facebook, or, hey, you chose this over me. Now, God, he's saying, if you ask for it, Jeremiah 29:13, that's my last one. If you seek me, you will find me when you search for me with all your heart. And that's it. I'll mute my mic, man.
That's good. Roberto Infante with Tigrig Garage Doors, Chattanooga, Tennessee. Brother, thank you for coming on and spending some time with us. I know there's probably a million things you could be doing right now, like installing garage doors or selling doors or service, but you carved this time out to come on the podcast and share your story and ask some questions that might help our audience. And so greatly appreciate that. And thank you for coming on and helping us create some content. So, if you're a startup out there, keep your head up. You know, there's highs and lows. And so right now, I know a lot of people going through highs and lows. I know people are doing really well, and I know people that are struggling. So the key to this is stay focused, stay balanced, and focus on what's in your control, and sell, sell, sell. I think that's the key. So lots of good information in this podcast. I think this is probably, we're crushing it right now on the podcast. I love the startups. We're working on a startup program right now that we hope to launch in the near future, specifically for people that are either wanting to start their company or are starting their company. And I hope to have that launch here in the next 4 or 5 months. So bear with me, but we're working on that behind the scenes. And if you want to come on the show and you're a startup, your new company, let's say a year or two old, I want to hear your story. I want you to come on and talk about some of the things that you would recommend that people avoid or do to help grow their company. With that, Jen, you got anything?
That was really good. It was great to connect with you, Roberto. And wish you all the best.
Thank you, guys. There's absolutely only benefits from me, but thank you guys for taking the time. I think that you guys are the ones carving the time to put back into the industry, into the community. So there's a lot of people that appreciate it, and I'm definitely one of them. So thank you.
Awesome. We hope to see you at GDU in the future. Yeah.
And I'll say one thing before we bounce. I would like to say that I'll be praying for your baby.
Thank you.
That your baby comes healthy and full of life. And
with a Sherwinder.
With a Sherwinder. We get a Sherwinder tattoo on your baby.
Oh, man.
and then I'll be praying healing, because my wife and I both lost our middle child during pregnancy. And so I understand the pain that comes along with that. And so no matter how far away you get from that, it still hits home when you talk about it. So I can tell it chokes you up like it chokes me up. But God's good, bro. And
that is good.
You got to praise him in the good and the bad times and be thankful for what we got. So I just wanted to share that with you and let you know that I'll be praying, and you guys aren't alone in that bucket. It was amazing how many people came out of woodworks when that happened to us and told us that that had happened to them too. Not many people talk about it, but it happens a lot. So great blessings.
Well, thank you, guys. All right, guys. Thank you. All right. God bless.
Yep.